morning. So we left off last week. We were discussing the halacha that appears in Maseches Pesachim, that once the chametz becomes asur b'hanah, one can no longer be mevatel the chametz. I mean, I used a very, very cryptic phrase, that's ena b'shuso. It's not, either it doesn't belong to him, or it's shalom ena b'shuso, or it's tadi b'olam. We had an array of different opinions in last week, as to why exactly this is true. But the bottom line is, when all the dust settles, the halacha is, when something doesn't belong to you, then you can no longer be mevatel. So we left off with the question, I understand if bitul chametz is hefker, you can't be mafker what you don't own. But if bitul chametz is not even hefker, bitul chametz is just a declaration that the chametz is ka'afir di'ara, I don't care about it, it's meaningless to me, so why can't I do that? What's wrong with that? It's not dinei mamonos. So if bitul chametz is rooted in dinei mamonos, I understand why it's subject to the limitation of ena b'shuso. But if it's not rooted in dinei mamonos anyway, why should there be any limitation whatsoever? So we began to give a possible mashal to a sugi that appears in Uchas Tumas Ochlin. There is a din that before food is susceptible to be mekabel tuma, it has to undergo a process called heksher. It has to come to contact with a liquid, water, six other liquids, and it has to take place dafka l'rotzon. It has to be b'nichus. It has to be that I'm happy about the apple getting wet. If my apple's sitting on the table and falls into a bucket of water, and I walk, I say, oh, Gavalt, that's terrible. I don't want that. My apple to get wet. So then that's meaningless. That's not Hoksha the Kabbal Tumah. I think my derives is from Sukkim. But as long as you have the Ratzom, so then it's susceptible to Tumah. So the Rambam added on something that does not appear explicitly in the Gemara. The Rambam says that the Heksher has to be not just the Ratzom, it has to be the Ratzom Habaylim. It has to be not that a stranger is happy. I'm happy. So if I go ahead and I take your apple and I throw your apple into water and I'm jumping for joy and you're not too happy about it, that's not called the rotzah. That's not called the chus. It has to be the rotzah of the. That was the Rambam's chiddush. And the Rash from Sam Schulim says he doesn't know where the Rambam got it from. There is no such halacha. So we suggested that at least according to the view of the Rambam, that there exists this precedent for something which is not dinim ominous. The fact that food has to become wet before it becomes tame is absolutely zero to do with dinim ominous. And yet, something that requires ratzo, nichusa, requires machshava, even in the realm of tumah v'tahara, the realm of a heter, so the Torah doesn't recognize the ratzo of somebody else. A stranger's ratzo can't affect my item, can't affect my property, even though it's not rooted in dinim ominous. So just as the Rambam insists that the ratzo has to be an expression of the ratzon habaylam dafka, even in non-dinim ominous areas of halacha, so too when it comes to bitul chametz, even though according to the Rambam, according to Rashi, bitul chametz has nothing to do with dinim ominous. According to the Rambam and Rashi, you're not mafki your chametz. You're simply just giving a bilti ratzon. It's a bilti nichus. It's almost like the opposite of the ratzon. So that declaration, that mindset of I'm not interested in my chametz, even though it's not rooted in all the chashimish, was nothing to do with dinim ominous, nevertheless, it can only be affected by the bialim. That was that mashal that we gave last week. But before we could go further with understanding this mashal, we have to go back, I'm saying to the nimshal, we have to go back to the source of the mashal, namely, that din of tumas, of tumas hechshel, a couple of tumas ochlin. If bitul chametz is building on that, we have to make sure we really understand what that's all about. So we have to take really a step back and learn the sugya, which is a subset of our sugya, and that relates to tumas ochlin itself. I mean, why exactly should it be so? Conceptually, what is this all about? That the Rambam is telling us that Ritzon HaBaylam is necessary. So once we understand what Ritzon HaBaylam means by Tumas Ochlin, then we have a fighting chance to understand what it means by Bitul Chametz as well. So if we take a look at the Bar Mekomos, Rashi, it's Rashi Al HaTorah. It's Rashi in the third of the Bar Mekomos, in almost like two, three words, tells us a whole world about Heksha LeKabal Tumah. So Rashi says in the third of the Bar Mekomos, it's Rashi in Vayikra Perek Yud Aleph, V'nafal B'nei V'sam Alav. The Torah describes that a food became wet, and then a sheretz or an avela falls onto it. So the Torah says, "Af mishenigav min hamayim," even though right now it's dry, it's no longer wet, but it was wet at one time. Shaloi pi the Torah elalios alav shame ochel. Rashi is almost like apologizing for the din. The din is clear. The Mishnayos are clear that the food need not be wet now in order for tumah to spread. So Rashi is almost asking the question, well, why should that be so? It's almost like Rashi is anticipating the following, that if you tell me that somehow water is a conduit, somehow water is necessary to conduct the electricity, to conduct the tuma. So then I understand why the apple has to be wet b'shas ma'isa when the sheretz of the nevela falls onto it. But that's not the din. The halacha is quite clear that the apple does not have to be wet anymore. So Rashi is forced into the court to explain, so what's going on? So why is it that the Torah says that it has to be wet at one time? It's almost like we would have understood if the Torah would have said that you need water to be present to spread the tumah. Okay, I got it. I understand that. But that's not true. So what's pshat in the heksher in the first place? So Rashi says the answer is that heksher lekabel tumah is for the following reason. Shloik pita Torah el elios alav shem ochel. The washing off, exposing of the food to a liquid is there to complete the shem ochel, to give it a shame of a food. If I have food, it's not fit yet, it's not done yet, it's not ready yet, so it's not subject to Kabbalah's Tumah. It's almost like Moshe Lebo David Omer. If I have a kli, but the kli is not ready yet, it's lacking what's called Gemar Malacha, it's not subject to Tumah. So let's say if I have a piece of wood, and the wood has been formed into a kli, but the final touches of the kli haven't been put onto it yet. So that's called the lack of Gemar Malacha. It's not Makabal Tumah. So the Gemara has that lotion, actually, Maseches Chulin. Rashi is almost referencing that sugi, the end of Maseches Chulin. The Gemara even uses a phrase that an ochel shlohukshar is almost like a kli shlonigma malach badami. The Gemara uses a very, very vague kind of a mushal. Rashi takes the mushal very literally. Rashi says the purpose of wetting the fruit is somehow that's considered to be the Gemara Dabba. We have a dry something that hasn't been washed off yet. Again, it's hard to understand the details of this mushal because washed off doesn't only mean water. You can wash it off with dam also. It sounds a little bit strange, but yeah. Sometimes you can get the basic, you know, surah of the halacha, even though some of the intricate details don't always necessarily match up in terms of what our understanding are. You know, at the end of the day, we have to always, especially in the realm of Tumah V'Tahara, the Rambam, the very end of Sefer Tahara, writes that Achamei Kichlos are called Tumah V'Tahara Achukim. So we don't always understand all the nuances of what's going on. But the basic tzura, says Rashi, is that the goal of Heksher is not just spiritual hocus pocus kind of halacha. That's the way Tumah spreads. No, the purpose of Heksher is Lios Lav Shebochol. Now Rashi explains Umishiyarno of Heksher Kamos Tumah Pamachas. Now that makes a lot of sense. Once the item becomes wet one time, Shuvenu Nekra Emenu. Then the shame oichel was chal on the apple, and now it's not going anywhere. Once it's chal, once the piece of wood was turned into a kli, so now it's a kli. So just because it's dried off, that's lamal of lamayri. So in that one half line, Rashi gives you a world about what the purpose of heksher is all about. So comes the Ramban in the fourth of the Ramakamos, and takes an issue with Rashi. But Rashi, Dafka avoided saying, Rashi almost like bent over backwards to avoid somebody to say, lest one says that Heksher has something to do with the spread of the tumor proper. Rashi's going out of his way to avoid that approach. That's the approach that the Ramban takes. If you take a look at the end of the third, at the end of the fourth of Ramakamos, it's the last paragraph in the Ramban. V'tama Heksher. Says Ramban, let me tell you what the real reason, not like Rashi, what the real reason for Heksher Oichlan is all about. Ba'avur, ki lichloch ha-sheretz v'amitamim, yidabeg b'macholim b'lachos, v'lo kein b'yaveshim. That, again, the Ramban uses the word that we use in modern Hebrew for the dirt, lichloch. He doesn't mean lichloch in the classic sense of the word, but almost like came that, like almost like the schmutz of the sheretz, the bad part of the sheretz, you know, will get stuck. It's going to be dovek machal malachos. It's going to spread through water. It's like sometimes to understand the world of ruchnius, you have to look a little bit at the world of gashmius. That liquids, you know, if you take two dry things and touch them to one another, there's not going to be that much of a spreading. But if there's a liquid there, so the liquid is going to spread things. So the Ramban says that's true in the world of Olam HaSal Yerim as well. That the lokein v'yaveshim, dry things somehow the dirt the lichluch doesn't spread. So now of course the Ramban, who just went the opposite angle than Rashi, who just said that heksher is not some prerequisite to prepare the food, to give it a shame, ochel, in order for kabbalas tumah to be chal. But rather, according to the Ramban, the heksher is part and parcel of the kabbalas tumah itself. That the mere touching of a dry mouse to a dry apple doesn't do the trick. but the touching of a mouse to a wet apple does spread the tumah. So now the Ramban's bothered with the Abbi's kasha. So how come the din is if the apples have already been dried off, the tumah spreads? So the Ramban continues, "V'asta ha'toira ha'chok ha'yiseira l'tameh ha'mushar b'mayav v'nigvu sh'onitam v'arein l'shiurin." So the Ramban says a startling statement. The Ramban says it's like a siyag deraisa. We spoke a little bit about this in the past. It's the real din of Heksha, says the Ramban, is only when the apple is mamash wet. That's the real halacha of Heksha. Eloi, the Torah doesn't want to take any chances that once the apple was wet, did the apple really dry off properly? Did not dry off properly? It's a low plume. It's a gezeira across the board. It's on that list of don't own chametz because you may come to eat the chametz. It's don't cook bas b'chalav, you may come to eat the bas b'chalav. The nazir shouldn't eat the raisins, he may come to drink the wine. All those gezeiros that I just threw out, which may or may not be gezeiros. Some Hashem said all the above are gezeiros, maybe not. So this is another, almost like a siyal, gezeir deraisa. The real mekoy, the real din deraisa, the real concept of heksher really only makes sense when the apple is still wet. But min haTorah, Kadosh Baruch Hu made a siyag, even when the apple has been dried off, because every that may still be wet, or was wet at one time.
Yet, if it gets wet while it's still attached,
that doesn't do the trick, right? Right. Why should that be so? Right. I mean, here, almost in a certain sense, it's like what Rashi quotes in Chumash, that it's almost like Yev Shablavachi. Everything gets wet when it's attached. All the whole parsha actually just went down the drain. So right. And again, whenever we're dealing with Tumah Tahara, we can give almost like a little bit of a philosophy, but then the details don't always fit in. So this machlokes Rashi and the Ramban is not just a conceptual machlokes; it's a very basic halachic machlokes as to, are there really two stages that are going on here? In order for an apple to become tameh, so what's the gedra did? Is the apple becoming tameh that there's really one process of spreading of tumah proper? That's the touching of the mouse to the apple. Whatever has to happen before, there's a prerequisite. It's almost like the same way if the apple isn't edible yet. So the apple didn't grow yet. It's not big enough to be eaten, so it's not an eichel. So it's not makabel tumah. So you wouldn't say the growing of the apple is a part of the tumah process. The growing of the apple is a prerequisite for the tumah process. The getting wet, according to Rashi, is a prerequisite for the tumah process. But there's really only one davar hametameh. The maisa hametameh is the sheretz, is the mouse touching the apple. Mashenken, according to the Ramban, the wetness of the fruit is the tchilas kabbalas tumah. That means that's part of the process, that the tumah is going to spread through the liquid itself. So the liquid is not a creation of the cheft of the apple. It doesn't address the cheft of the apple, say. It's part, it's also a prerequisite, but it's a different type of a prerequisite. L'chora, this sheet is a Rambam, that hechshel kabbalas tumah requires ratzon, and it requires ratzon of ratzon habayilim. So the chor, this makes a lot of sense according to Rashi. Because according to Rashi, the idea of heksher is putting the final touches on the item. So one could argue, who puts the final touch on the item? Going back to the Moshe, the Gemara gives Maseches Chulin, that eichel shlo, huk shlo kamatuma, is like kli shlo nigma malach badami. So let's say I have a wooden bowl, and we're trying to figure out, is the bowl finished or not? Was the Gemara Malach or not? So it depends. So if I'm still planning on bringing it back to the carpenter and he's still going to smooth it off, he's going to work on it, so it's not yet Gemara Malach. So if something touched it, it doesn't become tummy. But if I said, you know what, I don't have to have such a fancy bowl, it could be a little rough around the edges, that's also okay. So if I decide, for me, it's Gemara Malach. Who makes that call whether something is Gemara Malach or not? Imagine the following. You have a bowl, and I look across the street at your bowl and I say, oh, Dr. Fisher's bowl, I think it's Gemara Malach. It's honest. It's a joke. The Mishnah says the Maseches Kelim. That's a farce. Of course, the Bailim decide. Who else is going to decide whether it's Gemara Malach except for the person who was in charge? That's why some of you may remember we spoke a lot about this back in Bava Kama days, back in Sukkah days, in the early days of Luva Gwazel. We spoke about the principles of whether something is a Shinoi, whether Ganav is kind of a Yush, or Gazel is kind of a Yush, Mashiri, etc. So there's a Mishnah at the end of Maseches Kelim that talks about that if a Ganav or a Gazlan steals somebody's leather, and then the Ganav or the Gazlan make it into something, is it considered to be that a Gemara Melacha, not a Gemara Melacha? So the Gemara has a whole discussion. Well, does the God of Engazot own the leather? Are they going to get to keep the leather? Is Shina Kaina, Shina not Kaina, Yush Kaina, Yush not Kaina, a whole complicated sugya that's on the back of Bava Kaaba. But the entire sugya is working with the premise that, of course, the Bailam are the ones who make the call. Who else should make the call? Whether something is a Gemara Melacha. So according to Rashi, that Hekshel Kabel Tuma is really...
It's subjective.
It will depend on the right. But it's subjective to the Bailam, though. Right. To collect to the Bailam, not to the stranger. So according to Rashi, I can begin to understand what the Rambam's talking about. It makes sense that once the Halacha says you need Ratzon, the Ratzon has to be the Ratzon of the Bailam. It can't be the Ratzon of a stranger. There's no Shaychas to declare whether the fruit is Nigma Malachta, so to speak, or not. Mashiach, according to the Ramban, that the goal of the water is simply there as a conduit to spread the tumah. So it would be lechora. It doesn't make any sense to insist on having bailam. What did the bailam do anything? It's like mashlam al davedoma. Let's say I go ahead and I take a dead mouse and I put it onto your apple, and you're screaming you don't want. But the mice touched the mice. The mouse touched the fruit. So it might have given him the bailam there or not. That's ridiculous. Of course, there's no requirement for the bailam to be there in order for the fruit to become tamei. So the Chora, if there's no requirement for the Bailam to be present of any expression of Das whatsoever for the food to become Tameh, so then why should the Hekshah, which is really, in a sense, just the part of the tumor spreading process, doesn't relate to the Chefts of the apple per se, so then why the world should require Bailam on that? So if we're using the Rambam's requirement of Bailus as the Mokor, as the example that we have of non-dinimuminous requirement of bailus, so we have to make sure the Rambam's case is right. So the Rambam's whole presentation maybe should be subject to this, but like it's Rashi in the Rambam. But we have to take the Rambam maybe one step further. Even though Zion, even if there is such a statement, even the Rambam is right that you require return of bailam, which the Rashba and others thought was not correct, that we still need a little bit of fine tuning. What exactly that means that you need return of bailam? What is that? What exactly are the parameters of bailus for these non-dinimamis? Dinimamis, we know. We know that you have to be the bailam to sell a car. We know you have to be a bailam to give a gift. We know you have to be a bailam in order to be mafke. That we know already. But this is a whole new level of requirement of ownership, requirement of bailus. So we have a little bit of work to do to fine tune what exactly that hakdara, what the definition of bailus is for these purposes. So we spoke at the very end of the shiur last week about the Gemara in the end of the first Berachot Pesachim talks about if I own an animal that's a korban, how is that animal going to become hukshel kabel tuma? I'm not the bailam on it, so to speak. So the Gemara doesn't raise that challenge per se, but the Rambam has to raise that challenge. Because according to the Rambam, if what you don't own, if you're not the bailam, so you can't create the hukshel kabel tuma. So the Rambam, at least the way the Ktos understood the Rambam rises to the challenge. And the Ktos reads into the Rambam the following, that if you look carefully at the Gemara actually is talking about a parah of shlomim. It's talking about an animal that's a shlomim, and a shlomim happens to be kachim kalim. There happens to be a Tana out there, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who holds kachim kalim of Bailam. We mentioned this on Friday, that there's a machlekes, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and the Rabbanon. If I'm standing under the chuppah and I can't find the ring, but I do have a piece of meat of a kashim kalim, so by the example of the meat is probably not so good. That's after shechita, to the animal itself. I pull out a goat. I run to the back. Wait, hold the phone 1 second. I bring out a goat, and when the Masada Kedushin asks me, "Do you own the goat?" So I say, "Well, it's kashim kalim. Of course I own it. Kashim kalim I'm in Bailam." And the Masada Kedushin says, "Wait a second. That's so simple. We better go learn the Sugya of a Kama. According to the Rabbana, Kachim Kama is Lav Mom and Bailam. So it's a whole machlek is at the time. What's the din? Can a person be Makadish and Isha with Kachim Kama?" So the Ktsoi says, according to the Rambam, I understand why the Gemara Davka speaks about a behemoth shlomim. Why does the Gemara talk about a behemoth chatas and Oshim, etc.? Because, wait a second, Oshim, chatas, also Kachim. Kachim don't belong to the Bailam. And according to the Rambam, you need bailus in order to be heksher kabel tuma. So says the Ktzos, the only reason why, the only way you can possibly have a heksher by behemoth kachim, except for other reasons, which are beyond that discussion right now, but if you go with the regular rules of heksher kabel tuma, so then the Ktzos says it only makes sense in the realm of kachim kalim, because the din is kachim kalim of bailus. That's what the Ktzos says. So Reb Chaim Hoizer and the Shaz Tshuvas Achiezer disagrees fundamentally with the Ktzos' entire mahalach. Says Reb Chaim Hoizer, when the Rambam says that you require bailus for hechsher, yesh lachor, raise the chagi. What does that mean? You require bailus for hechsher. What is that all about?
Does that mean that Hechsher is, and again, it's not dinim mamonos in any real sense of the word, whatever it is, but it follows the patterns of dinim mamonos. Namely, you have to really have official halachic bailus. It has to be yours. It doesn't matter whether there is another owner. Not a, if you're not the owner, hakol mikol, the same way that if Reuven doesn't own the animal, he can't be machdish the animal. If he doesn't own it, he can't sell it, he can't give it a maton, he can't be mafker it. So too, if he doesn't own it, then he can't create heksher on it. Is that the pshat? Well, says Reuven, that's not the pshat. Even according to the Rambam, there's no requirement of bailus in order to have heksher. What does the Rambam mean in the second of Maimonides when the Rambam writes, "Hushe nasa lember tzon bailim"? What the Rambam means is as follows: how in the world can I do heksher on something that belongs to you? It's not that you positively, actively require bailus. What the Rambam is saying is that if there's another bailim here, if there's somebody else who has a claim to this apple, how in the world is Reuven going to cause tzaras for Shimon's apple? How in the world could heksher be accomplished if there's another bialim here? Says Reb Chaim Meir, what would the din be? There is no other bialim. Nobody else owns the apple. But guess what? Neither do you. You don't own the apple either. So says Reb Chaim Meir, that's okay. The Rabbi never said that's no good. What do you think this is, dinim hominis? You think this is hektish hefker? We spent the first half hour explaining why it's almost like hektish and hefker. Says Reb Chaim Meir, the Rabbi never said it. The Rambam says that if Reuven takes Shimon's apple and makes it wet, so the Rambam says it's garnish, it's lamal v'lamayim. That's not going to create a hechsher kabel tuma. But what if Reuven takes an apple that belongs to nobody? Nobody has any monetary claim of this apple. So then good, says the Rambam, but I think this is a dinim hominis. You don't have to own the car. You have to own a car to be makdish. You don't have to own an apple to create hechsher kabel tuma. So therefore, Chaim Meir says, the Ketais is so bothered with Gevel, how can there be Heksher by Karbonis? It doesn't belong to you. So the Ketais is doing, turning the world upside down, saying, no, up he did, it doesn't belong to you. Why? Oh, because of Yosef Galili. Oh, the Kaddish Kachar Kalim is Bekudeshes. So the Ketais had to dig up Rabbi Yosef Galili and had to create a formal dinimuministic relationship between you and this food in order to create Heksher and Kabel Tuma. Says, it's not necessary, you don't have to go so far.
If there's a Baal, we need what's in a Baal.
That's right. There's no Baal, then anybody.
Well, if it's
as long as somebody's happy about it. Whoever made it wet, well, it has to be happy. Somebody's got to express Ratzon. Because remember, if it's not the Ratzon, that's not called the Heksher. So who is the one who supplies the Ratzon? It's not the person who made it wet.
an apple that is ownerless.
Right. It's still not.
It had become wet. After becoming detached, and then the mouse touches it, does not become.
As long as it has to have somebody was happy about it, right? That's it. That's halacha. That you have to have rotzon. That's kiyuta and maya mozera. That's exactly the concept. Yiten yuten dumiyutach yiten. So that you can't. That we can't ignore. But the necessity that it be a bailim, says Reb Chaim Meir, the Rambam never said that. When the Rambam said the phrase v'ushe noslem b'ritzon bailim, the Rambam meant, it can't be at the expense of another bialim. But if it's neutral, there's no bialim, so then there's no bialim is necessary. If that's the case, then we have to borrow this concept back and plug it back at the Bittul Chametz. So we're trying to understand, why is it that the Gemara speaks about the bialim being necessary to do Bittul Chametz? So we start off by saying Bishlam of Bittul Chametz means Hefker, like Tosis, or even like the Ran's watered down Hefker. It's a Chalois, and Didimominus, it's like Hektish, Matan, Mechira, Hefker, so that I understand. So unless your name is written on that Chametz, unless you have the registration of that, you have the title of that Chametz, you can't be the one to be involved in the Chametz. But according to Rashi and the Rambam and the Ramban, who hold back and Daf Beis, back and Daf Dal, the Bittul Chametz is nothing of the sort. Bittul Chametz is just an expression of a Ratzon. It's a Ratzon that I don't want it. It's a nichus that I don't want. It means I don't want the chametz. I don't care. It's like after the hour, it's here. It's meaningless to me. So we raised the question. So why do we need bailim to express that? So came along some acharonim and said, oh, the same way that Rambam says, you need bailus to express nichuson, ratzon for heksher, even though it's not rooted in the mamonos at all. So too, you see from here that whenever the Torah requires a state of ratzon, or a state of nichusa, or a state of lack of rotzah, lack of nichusa, those kinds of halachas have to be done by the bailim. So wait a second. Is that a good moshul? Is that a good comparison? So Bishlam, according to the Ketzois, who says that, yeah, when it comes to Hechsher, there is a din. There's a din you require by us. It's not Dini Mominus. That's the din, says the Rambam. For who? She Yinosin Aleim Ritzon Bailam. You require Bailus. And therefore, if you're not the Bailam, I don't care who is or is not the Bailam. If you are not, you, Ruvain, you want to create Hechsher, you better be the owner of this object. So we made an equation on the board. You, Ruvain, have to be the owner to create Hechsher. You, Ruvain, have to be the owner to create Bitul Chametz. And if you're not the owner, why are you not the owner? Because it's a Davar Asabano and a Shaloi, whatever the reasons are of less Sugya. If you are not the owner, then you can't do the trick. But wait a second. That comparison is only true in the worldview of the Ketzois. According to Reb Chaim Oizer, even by Hechsher, there was no such din. There is no din you have to be the owner. The din is there can't be another owner. That's why Reb Chaim Oizer said, nah, mapidom. Kachim kalim, kachim kachim. You could have nichusa on kachim. I am not the owner. But there is no other owner. Heck, this is not really the owner here. Nobody owns it. If nobody owns it, so then first come, first serve. Whoever wants to supply the nichusa, supplies the nichusa. If we're basing everything off the marshal of the Rambam, by Hechsher Kabatuma, then Bitul Chametz is going to fall by the wayside. Why? Once the Chametz becomes Asabana, you're not the owner. Okay. So could the rightful owner please stand up? We're waiting for him to stand up. There is no owner. It's Asabana. Nobody owns it. So Chametz is the perfect example. Chametz Achaz Bani Suro is the replica of Kachim. It's an example of something that you don't own, but quite frankly, nobody else really owns it either. So that'll be the test case between the Ketzais and Reb Chaim Oizer. So according to the Ketzais, if you don't own it, you can't create these chalosim. Either not the Mamnus, Kachaza. But according to Reb Chaim Oizer, there never was such a din. Just because you don't own it doesn't matter. What really matters, says Reb Chaim Oizer, does somebody else own it? And if there's nobody else who owns it, so then you can create Hechsher according to Reb Chaim Oizer. And if you want to carry that over to Chametz, if nobody else owns it, then you can create Bittul. So according to Chaim Oizer's version of the Rambam, it's going to be very, very hard to explain, very hard to defend why you require Bailus for Bittul Chametz. So when all the dust settles, don't put a tent on the word dust on this one, because the Afriara, but we're still not quite sure why what it says in that Gemara is true. That Gemara says it, we can't argue with it. The Gemara says that Bittul doesn't work post Mani Surah because of some kind of lack of ownership. So according to Tosus and the Ran, that Bittul is rooted in Hefker, the Gemara reads like a charm. According to Rashi, the Rambam, and the Ramban, the Gemara is much more difficult to understand. We have two things have to be true. The Rambam and Hechsher Tumah has to be true, and the Ketzos' version of the Rambam has to be true. So the Ramban claims that the Rambam is not true, and Reb Chaim Oizer claims that the Ketzos' version of the Rambam is not true. So it's not poshut at all why the Gemara says what it says. It says it. That's the din, kach hazeh. But the lump says to why it should be so. Once you take Bittul out of the realm of plain and simple Hefker, it becomes much more difficult to understand. But a couple of one thing is clear, that if you read the Gemara Kapshuto, the Gemara is saying, once something is Asavano, you can't be Mafker. Why? Because it's in a Shalom, and it should, whatever the reason is, Tachlis, once it's Hefker, once it's Asavano, it is impossible to be Mafker. That seems to be screaming out clear. Nothing else is clear in the Gemara, but that line seems to be pretty clear. So hopefully Mitzvah Shem tomorrow, we'll be going to share tomorrow Mitzvah Shem. So we're going to go back to the drawing board and question even that. And putting aside the Chometz part of the Sugya, is that statement really 1,000% true? That you can't be mafker davar asabana? It sounds that way from Sakhman Avav, but hopefully Mitzvah Shem tomorrow we'll see that there's another Gemara that's the way in on this topic. So Mitzvah Shem tomorrow, we'll continue.